Just wherever. Smile a lot.
The regular December meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors will come to order. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record reflect that all five board members are present, so we do have a quorum. Is there a report from closed session, Mr. Counsel?
We met last regularly scheduled meeting in closed session to discuss the matters listed on the agenda. No final actions were taken that required reporting at the next meeting.
Thank you. Are there any additions, deletions, or consent calendar items to be pulled? Director Coben?
Tammy looked like she was going to. If I may, I'd like to ask that the agenda item B, the minutes be pulled, and we have a
7B?
7B, yes.
From the consent agenda.
Thank you.
Okay. 7B is pulled for separate consideration.
And Mr. President?
Yes, Director Chaldecott.
Item C, the fire truck.
Item C is also pulled from the consent agenda for separate consideration.
And may I clarify 7B?
7B,
because
yes,
there are some of those sets of minutes that are not prepared. So I'd like to identify those as the September 2nd meeting, the September 22nd meeting, the September 29th, October 12th, October 14th, and November 21st. Just for the public's information and the board, a few of these are just, one of them is a continued meeting, and two of them are very brief special meetings, and we've just had some complications with some equipment, and we will guarantee that these will be brought before you next month.
So the dates that you read are not included on the consent
Correct.
Agenda?
Correct. The only ones on the consent item that has been pulled are August 25th and October 27th.
October 27th. Thank you. Any other additions, deletions, to the agenda or pulled consent calendar items? If not, the agenda stands as amended. We have an acknowledgement this morning and a presentation to a retiring employee, and I'm going to step to the podium with the proclamation here and he's not here?
I haven't seen him here yet.
You haven't? He's obviously an important part of this. So we'll just put this off until he arrives. And, Brian, if you want to let me know when he arrives, then we'll take it up.
That'd be good.
Thank you.
Perhaps he retired a lot earlier than we thought.
Yes. I don't think he's worried about punishment anymore.
Short-timer, as they say in the military.
I was going to see somebody coming in the door.
There we go. Exactly.
Okay. Just to remind the board and the public that we have a couple of closures of our offices and our utility field operations. Monday, December 26th, and Monday, January 2nd are those holidays we will be observing. And to remind customers, if they have problems, that they can call 927-6223 and receive our answering service, who will then respond to our on-call and standby personnel. The press commission met last night, and it says in my report that there was a presentation by the Community Center of Cambria. Unfortunately, there was a conflict, so they were not there. So we held our annual celebration that we typically do with the PROS commissioners. It went very well, and it lasted a couple of hours, and we had some very nice networking and friendship. The PROS commissioner recruitment is underway. There was a new law that goes into effect on January 1st of 2006 that limits the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Commission to 5 members. In the past, it's been comprised of 10 members. And so we have that advertisement currently out. I'd like to make that announcement to those present and listening at home that the recruitment is in effect until 4 o'clock on December 23rd. The applications are available online. We probably have some here, or anyone who's interested can make contact with any of the CCSD staff members. If you go online and you go to our website at cambriacsd.org, you'll click on the link that says What's New, and the application form is there. It's a simple one page, and it can be turned in or mailed to our district offices. For any information, you can contact Connie Davidson at the district offices at 927-6223, or her web address is cdavidson@cambriacsd.org. As many of you know, the Roberta Zeeberg Grant Awards were made, and the district was fortunate out of the three applications they submitted. One was awarded to the Guthrie B. and Keeney House. The state awarded $273,000. The other two grant agreements for the public's information that we submitted was a restoration of the athletic fields at the Santa Lucia Middle School, and then a coordinated grant application with Green Space for the Creekside Reserve. There were, and I stated in the report, there was a $28 million total budget, and they received applications totaling $35 million. So simple math tells us that they weren't all going to get awarded. But they did award 88, the number that I remember is 88 of the projects out of 103, which is pretty good. Mm-hmm. We're proud to be partnering with the Guthrie B. and Keeney and the Cambria Historical Society to see their project through fruition. I gave you a status report on the progress of the other per capita grant projects that you all awarded within the past year to 2 years. The tennis courts, as many know and have seen in the Cambrian at Coast Union High School, is underway. In fact, today it was reported to me that the project will actually start here in the next day or two. They have been feverishly working on the pre-construction requirements, so that project is underway. Now that the Guthrie B. and Keeney House restoration project has the funding necessary to get it completed, I'm told that they will be underway as well. They have $69,000 of per capita grant funds available, as well as that Roberta Zeeberg grant opportunity. The district's downtown building on Center Street has been demolished, and we've submitted the payment for final reimbursements, and we anticipate getting that before the end of the year. And the Cambria Community Center fencing project has been done. We submitted payment, and we've actually received it. So I give you a recapitulation there that the total per capita grant projects that were appropriated by state parks was $220,000, and those that are committed to date are $219,466, and all but two of them are complete. And that completes my report.
Thank you. Any questions of the general manager? Thank you again, Tammy.
You're welcome.
I see that Bob Gressens has arrived. I think Bob will put off the wastewater and water report until after we finish with the rest of the manager's reports. We'll now hear from the fire chief. Chief.
Mr. President, I was asked to let you know that George Jardine is here.
Oh, he is. Well, why don't we finish the manager's reports? We'll get through Bob's report, and then we'll do the presentation.
Okay. Carlos, we're not going to be able to get that PowerPoint up, is that correct? While he tries to get it up, we were having trouble earlier getting the pictures up. You've got my report in front of you. Basically, the high points here are the smoke detector program that I talked about last week. So far, I believe as of yesterday, we have handed out about 100 two-packs of these community, and as you can see, this is one of multiple areas of Cambria where the power lines go behind the residences. So as the fire captain or the first person on scene goes to make an assessment of the fire, they have to be very careful in the dark that when they come around the corner to see what extent the fire is burning, that they don't run into any of these down power lines, which are often still burning. Next slide, please, Carlos. This is a picture of the front of the building. The fire basically started in the front of that white van that you can see on the left side. The van's been extinguished at this point, but when the first in engine company arrived, the single story of the house, which you'll see later, and the two-story portion of the residence, which is on the right, were completely involved in flames, as was the front of the van, and there were two adjoining residences that were also on fire. Next slide. You can see The fire has already vented through the roof on the arrival of the first incoming engine, and when the engine came down the street, one of the power lines was already down blocking the street, so the engine couldn't drive by it to get to the next hydrant. So they had that's the importance of having multiple hydrants. They had to bring in a hydrant from another end of the fire because there was a line blocking the street. Next slide. This part right here is the two-story part of the house, which is pretty well demolished. The floor inside in the center, right in here, it actually is partially collapsed. And this is the single-story portion of the house where that gentleman basically lost his life. In fact, he was right in front of the fireplace right here, and that's where he normally spent the night, is downstairs. Next slide. There's some of the firefighting efforts. Next slide. And there's the remnants the next day. You can see, again, this is a side view. There's a two-story house. There's the fireplace where the fire was built, basically, for a warming fire inside. And the gentleman was found about in here. You can see the close proximity of houses all around. The advantage we had that night is we did not have a prevailing wind. It was very calm. The smoke plume, when I got there at 2 o'clock in the morning, was going up like this and actually somewhat headed out over the ocean, so we had calm winds. Next slide. This is a residence that's directly behind the house. This siding and this eave was on fire when the first engine got there. That was their first priority. The people were still asleep in their home when the engine pulled up. And their first tactical priority was to put this fire out, the wood siding on the home and the wood fascia. And it was just radiant heat that ignited this. And that's one of the reasons that even in the lack of wind that we're concerned about wooden siding and wooden eaves is it just rapidly allows a simple fire to escalate well beyond the footprint of where the fire started.
What sort of distance is that from the main?
From the main part of the house, it's about 20, 25 feet at least, horizontally. Mm-hmm. Such as radiant heat. Next slide, Carlos. Switching gears for a minute, and then I'll answer any questions. This is a photo op we did the other day. That's in front of the new North Coast Ocean Rescue Team boat that we have now put in service. There's Tom Martin from the Garbagemen's Association. His organization gave us $2,000 towards the purchase of the boat, as did many other, not only Cambria residents, but philanthropic groups. So we'll acknowledge all of them in a future meeting. Next slide. And this is one of the recent training sessions. This is the completed boat, which is the first of its type in the United States. And that's the new motor, the new 30-horse oil-injected Yamaha, which really performs well. It's a catamaran-style boat, so you'll notice that underneath here it seems to be some air under the hull, and that's because when the motor propels it up, it gets up off the water a little bit, and it really turns like it's on rails, which is very helpful in trying to outrun the surf that's coming in and plunging waves to try to rescue people that may be in the impact or surf zone. They get either swept out to sea or that are in a boat and are cast overboard. Next slide. And Sparky and our department wants to remind everybody to have a fire safe happy holiday. In the back of the room, we have a two-sided brochure. One side's for residences, how to have a safe, a happy holiday season, and the other side has tips for businesses so that we don't have some of the fire disasters that unfortunately occur all over the United States this time of year. So the rest of my reports are in front of you. I don't want to take any more time. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions of Chief Putney?
What started the fire?
It's a simple answer, but it's very complex. The bottom line was too large of a log put into a fireplace that shouldn't have been used, and too many combustibles in the living room in front of the fireplace that allowed sparks from the fire or the log itself to catch them on fire. So it was a multitude of practices that should be avoided.
How could you tell that the fireplace should not have been used?
In the process of doing the investigation after the fire, one of the things that's typically done is, if the fireplace is suspected, is to cover the top of the fireplace and either put a smoke bomb or an incendiary device that emits a large amount of smoke, usually colored smoke, to see if the flue and the chase are intact. And in the process of doing that, it was very clear that from the inside out, that the fire mortar between the rocks and some of the rocks had cracks in them, allowing not only embers but smoke to enter the living area of the residence, because this was an open beam ceiling. And the second thing is, they often found each other's neighbors. They were crossing paths as they went to each other's houses and try to wake people up and make sure everybody was out. That's what's great about a place like Cambria and San Francisco. They go out in the street and figure, if the neighbor burns up, tough luck. But not here, people care about each other. So that was a big benefit in warning people, getting them out.
If there was any silver lining in the cloud, it's the incidents of people helping one another in a tragedy like this.
Very true.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll now hear from our utilities manager, Brian Bode. Brian?
Okay, I've got my written report. I've got a couple of things to add to it on an automatic meter reading, the AMR. All the meters are in, as far as we know, hopefully. But we'll run through a couple cycles and make sure we run all the bugs out. But that's good to know. On the SCADA system, you've got what I've reported there. Also yesterday, Bob Gressens, Jim Adams, myself, and Rob Frazier from Sun Pacific. We had a teleconference with CyberNet and worked out the details on getting an interim fix for a wireless alarm system from the Pine Knolls tank, so that can all go off without a hitch, because we were worried about that. And if Carlos has got the PowerPoint up, hopefully. I haven't done this in a while, just to speed things up, but every once in a while people ask me about, you know, how the creek's doing and the graphics, so I did it again. This is the cover. This is Farashi Creek Steelhead Bridge, or fish ladder, and this was taken yesterday, actually, and you can see there's quite a bit of water coming down Santa Rosa Creek for this time of year, which is very encouraging. Next. And this is San Simeon Creek Lagoon. It's full. There's no water going by the wells, of course, but we still have about around 12 feet of water table in our well field, which is very high. Next. This shows the white diamonds on the green line there show that we're about average for this time of year, and around 12 feet above sea level. Next. And this is the same thing, but it shows the history of the years that we've been doing this. And you can see that you can see where the kick, the last four diamonds there, you can see where there's kicks, where the water table comes up fast. And that's when we get a good rain. That's when the ground's saturated and the creeks start running and we get recharge. And that hasn't happened yet. And you can see that it can get as bad as the red one all the way to the right. And that was the Miracle March. But if you look at the Miracle March and follow it back, we were very, very low in the well field at that time. So right now we're looking like we're in pretty good shape, even if we had to go to March. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but it looks like we'll make it all right, even if that's the case. Next. This is Santa Rosa. Just to show the lagoon. The lagoon's full. It's, the creek's backed up quite a ways. And as you can see from the steelhead bridge, the fish ladder, that there's plenty of water still going in the creek, and we've been keeping that running last 5 years, 24/7. So that's good news. Next. And this is Santa Rosa's well levels, and you can see that they're full. The creek's running, so naturally they're going to be full. Next. This is Ben Bohr's little bailiwick. I took some pictures for him, and he might want to chime in here. But this little project is really going nice. This is a neat project, and this is on the south end. CCCs are putting the finishing touches on that end of the trail, and they're just doing a marvelous job. It's a pretty neat project, and it's going to last a long time, and something to really be proud of. And I've got a few more. So next. And you can see that it meanders through there, and you can see that it's wet around there, and there's a little wetlands in there, and that's the whole idea of this, is to get above the wetlands so you don't get muddy and you don't tear up the environment there. Next. This is one of the bridges that goes over a little dry creek there. And next. And people enjoying that same bridge. And next. And this is what the walkway is supposed to do. This is wetlands. It's wet, and it keeps us above that, and the grasses can grow and the little critters can live there, and everything works out fine. But beautiful project. It's going to be really something to enjoy for a long, long time. Anyway, thank you. Any questions?
Any questions of Brian Bode? Thank you, Brian, very much.
Good.
Appreciate it. We'll now hear from Patrick Bradley, our finance officer. Patrick?
Thank you, President Sanders. You have my report in front of you. I'll just briefly cover a couple of items. On the Crosstown Trail, we have actually invoiced Chevron our third installment. My report, I said the second installment for the Crosstown Trail, so that was incorrect. We've actually invoiced them our third installment as well as our third installment on the water tender. And since I wrote my report, and I've now jumped into the audit, I discovered that the auditor and partner that was in charge of our audit has since left the audit firm. So I'm not exactly sure who we're going to get to present our audit come January. I've got the draft of the audit, and I'm working on the response to it. But I just wanted to let you know the gentleman who normally would have been here to present it is no longer with the firm, so I'm not sure who we're going to have, but the audit will be presented in January. That really is all I have. Are there any comments or questions?
Patrick, I see from your report that we are not going to be charged for the November special election.
That is correct.
Is that right?
We are not going to be charged.
Sanity reigns once again.
Okay. Yeah, every once in a while it does rain, doesn't it?
That's right. Any other questions of the finance officer, district engineer? Bob?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, and apologies for running a little late to the meeting today. I'll just summarize the key projects that we're working on, and please feel free to stop me if there's a question on any one of them. The Water Master Plan EIR and Build-Out Reduction Planning, I'm listing those together since they're related to one another. RBF Consulting is continuing its work on the public review draft for the program level EIR. I did send them some detailed comments on a kind of a working draft that they had showed me. So there's more work to go on that. I'm thinking there's at least a couple more months yet before we get close to an administrative review draft on that particular document. Related to that, of course, is the build-out reduction plan. On that particular work, we've been coordinating closely with the county's update to the Cambria and San Simeon Acres community plan, so that's also layered in here. That particular report had about four or five different development alternatives, and on November 10th of this year, the Planning Commission approved the reduced development alternative, 4,650 residences, to go forward to the Board of Supervisors. So we've been dovetailing with that as best we can on our EIR work and also following the process with the Board of Supervisors. I understand that tentatively that's scheduled with the Board of Supervisors for the February 28th meeting. We received a November document that had the Planning Commission's recommendations included or incorporated into that, and they would like comments on that now by January 15th. I know that's an awful lot, but it's all kind of related. I might have got out of order here. The Pine Knolls tank replacement is another key project. As you saw from the fire, we really want to get that project going to improve the fire safety of the community. The on December 10th, which I think was Saturday, we sent out some review drawings to the Coastal Commission, so they've had them since Monday of this week. And that was the last of three items that the Coastal Commission required as pre-permit issuance conditions. We gave them a drainage plan earlier, an erosion control plan earlier, and now, lastly, this review set that they have to review and approve before the project can go forward. So that's where we're at, essentially waiting to hear back now from the Coastal Commission staff on that permit. As Brian mentioned, we are also looking at improving the SCADA system, so we have a wireless system for the alarms and controls on the tanks as opposed to the outdated telephone system. The desalination project, the key activity on that is permitting for the pending geotechnical and hydrogeological investigation. Padre Associates, who are sub-consultants to Corollo Engineers, have been handling the bulk of that work. Permits that are in various stages now are a minor use permit with the county. We have permitting with the Coastal Commission. Of course, they'd have jurisdiction over that minor use permit. There's the State Lands Commission. the Regional Water Quality Control Board, Army Corps of Engineers, and Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. And those are the balls that are up in the air right now on permits. We're hopeful that we can get an informal consultation with the Army Corps of Engineers on some of this work. So that's a key hang up right now as well on the permits. We're also oriented ourselves towards a Prop 50 state grant application that's due by the end of this year on that project. Lastly, on that project, the Water Resource Development Act funding, which is still waiting on the Army Corps of Engineers to sign their agreement. We did have some discussion with Lois Kapp's office earlier in the month. We're hoping those prove to be productive in, as far as getting this thing signed at their or approved by their Washington, D.C. headquarters. That seems to be the hang-up. The local Los Angeles division of the Army Corps seems very cooperative and is trying to assist us to push that along. So that's where we're at. Still waiting now for that PCA to be signed. The today, I'm going to switch subjects to Urban Water Management Plan update. You'll have a discussion on that. It's related to updating the version that you last saw in March of this year. We received comments from Department of Water Resources that requested additional information, a little different formatting on it, so we pretty much rewrote the majority of the report. The county's growth management ordinance, where they do a capacity assessment of all the different water suppliers as well as schools and so forth, and that was quite interesting. They have been responsive as far as providing listening to our comments on some earlier drafts. The final version now of that RMS report is going to go to the Board of Supervisors at their December 20th meeting for discussion and approval. So that concludes my report, and I wish everybody a happy holidays, and if there's any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. Thank you.
Any questions of the district engineer? Thank you, Bob. I have three requests. Yes, Director Villeneuve, did you want to say something? Okay. I have three requests to speak on this matter. The first is from Mady Gracie.
Good afternoon, directors.
Good afternoon.
I'm here to comment on the Boyle Engineering Drainage Plan for the Pine Knolls Water Tank Project. As immediate neighbors to the project site for 24 years and after reviewing the report, my husband and I feel some of the information is not entirely accurate, and we have some comments and concerns that we wanted to address. We did deliver a letter to all of you. Didn't know if you'd had an opportunity to read it. So this is some of that. The report states that the replacement tanks will increase the impervious area and could increase stormwater runoff to the surrounding area if not detained. The small berm within the tank site that's mentioned is actually much larger than it's indicated. It's 3 to 4 feet tall and has been built up over the years with the approval and assistance of CCSD staff to direct the runoff from tank overflow, which has happened on many occasions over the past 24 years we've lived there. Page 2, because the tanks are filled by the district's wells, an overflow may occur if the wells do not receive a shutoff signal from the tanks, and you have addressed that I guess this is a new system. That I don't know if that's different than what was mentioned in the report. It says the existing telephone-based controls are being replaced by a more reliable radio-based system. Is that the one that you just mentioned? Is that system, the radio-based, or is that different?
I think it would be appropriate to take up the technical aspects of this after the meeting with Bob. He can explain to you the technical issues.
Following up on that, there's still the possibility that the new control system could malfunction or fail, that the tanks will overflow. The paragraph, page 2, that states that the storm water runoff flows in an AC gutter on the southerly side of the street is actually incorrect. It actually flows on the easterly side of the street, since Manor Way runs north and south. Also, the report does not mention that the AC gutter only runs in short lengths because it is intersected by five driveways onto Manor Way. Therefore, the increased runoff flow travels actually across these driveways. On page 2, it states that there's no visible erosion present on the tank site or on the surrounding properties, although the intersection of Manor Way and Greystone Way shows some indication of ponding and some potholing of the asphalt paving. However, recommendations for Greystone Way drainage issues are outside the scope of this study, it states. This area of potholing and ponding water is contributed by runoff from Manor Way and the tank site. The area floods on heavy rain events and overflows into the driveway across the intersection on Manor Way and Greystone Way. Since the runoff will be increased due to the new tank construction, this area should be included in the scope of the drainage design. On page 2, it's incorrect about the existing course of water flow once it leaves Manor Way. I won't go into all the detail that I have in your letter, but having lived there for 24 years, we're very familiar with the course of water flow during a rain event or from overflow of the tanks. And if the report writers were to actually experience a flow event before they had written their report, they would see that the water does not flow as they describe it in their report. And we've detailed this in the letter to you. On page 5, it states that technical data used for figuring the runoff coefficient and runoff capture rate was taken from the Santa Maria Airport. We actually questioned the figures based from a location over 50 miles away from the tank site. It seems the design should use data from Cambria rainfall totals. On page 5, an overflow... Am I still here?
Okay. Yeah.
Overflow may occur if the wells do not receive a shutoff signal from the tanks. It also states that although the detention basin is not being designed with the sufficient volume for a tank overflow situation, the presence of an underground storm drain water detention tank serves to provide an added layer of protection. We and the surrounding neighbors feel that since it's possible for the tanks to attention to this.
Thank you. My suggestion, Mrs. Gracie, is that you meet with Bob Gressens, the district engineer, and I'm sure he can go over these issues point by point with you. And if there is a mistake, then I think we'd be willing to correct it. I know we would.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Deborah Capernaus. Excuse me if I mispronounced your name. Thank you. Capernaus.
Thank you for allowing me this time to present some questions I also have regarding the Pine Knolls Reservoir Replacement Project Drainage Analysis Draft and Technical Memorandum. I have a few questions, and I have the report here that refers to that once the water begins to drain from the tank site, it says, once on Manor Way, the storm water flows in an AC gutter on the southerly side of the road. And I would like to know and have an expanded definition of what an AC gutter is determined to be. I live on up in Pine Knolls at the corner of Manor Way and Greystone, and I see this as a curb, a small curb broken up by all the driveways along Manor Way. So my next question is that at the intersection of Manor Way and Greystone Way, which I'm quite unfamiliar with because that is the tax bill that I pay refers to it as Oakhurst. So the Greystone Way determined here shows some indication of ponding water and potholing of the asphalt paving. However, recommendations for Greystone Way drainage, I refer to as Oakhurst Way, issues are outside the scope of this study. And my question would be, what factors brought you to this conclusion that that property is, or that roadway is not a factor in the drainage of the water coming down Manor Way? And Manor Way, if it were to continue across Greystone Way, continues down my driveway to my front door. So I have experienced extensive flooding at my front door. We refer to it as Lake Caperones. We have drainage, but I don't know that the capacity for the drainage would meet this new project. And finally, I was wondering, having lived up there also for 21 years and knowing the conditions of the roads, how Manor Way and Greystone Way would not be required, and I see that the Coastal Commission has special condition number 2, which I'm not familiar with, but am familiar with that the county has conditions that need to be met when property is improved, and these conditions are met by grading and drainage specifications for property owners when expanding or doing work on their property. And I know for a fact that Manor Way and Greystone Way are private property and therefore have not been graded or paved according to the codes and standards of the county. And I can only assume that the Coastal Commission would not have any less of a standard for providing drainage, grading, and proper paving of the roadway to provide the drainage that is needed for the runoff of the tanks. We are very concerned. We are happy that the safety of our community is of utmost priority. But I'd like to have on the record that, in my opinion, this report indicates a willingness to ignore the safety issues for the families living near and around the new tanks. It seems to focus on how difficult and inconvenient providing these safety measures would be. Your report and my concerns of this will record and will provide evidence of your willingness to ignore the drainage and safety issues involved with this project, a project that is going from 206,000 gallons of water storage to 934,000 gallons of water storage. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Caperones. Again, I'm sure that
we have to maintain them ourselves. My recommendation to you as our district engineer is I would recommend that in this contract, when you finally approve it and implement it, that you put in an underground drainage pipe that will run past Manor Way and Greystone and run down to
Mr. Fedora, Oakhurst. Mr. Fedora, I think it would be much more productive if you have some specific suggestions with respect to drainage and other technical issues, if you sit down with the district engineer and explain them. That way, they'll get his undivided attention.
Well, the reason I hit you is because I think we're going to need some support financially from you people to do this.
Well, that could be. That could very well be. But I think it would be very helpful if you can sit down with Bob and explain these issues and your concerns and see if there are some engineering solutions to your issues.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I don't have any other requests to speak on this item. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to address the board on this matter? Apparently not. If not, we'll move on to the presentation of our proclamation to George Jardine, who I think is here now, isn't he? Brian, is that right? He is. Okay, I'm going to step up to the podium and join Brian and George at the podium. Brian, since you had the pleasure of working with George all these many years, I'm going to give you the honor of reading the proclamation.
Well, many years is right. Quarter of a century and change. Well, George, this is for 25 years of service with the community and a send-off on your retirement here. Whereas the wastewater supervisor, George Jardine, has worked with the Community Services District since September 2nd, 1980, and whereas he has presided as Operator 1, Operator 2, Senior Operator, and Wastewater Supervisor, and whereas George is known for his quick and friendly response to all wastewater emergencies in the community, is known by many citizens of Cambria, and is regarded as a great team player in wastewater operators. And whereas he has assisted with the startup of new activated sludge plants in 1980 and 1995, startup of the collection system number 2, that included connections of over 750 houses, 10 pump stations, and 42 miles of sewer line, and survived the flood of 1995 and helped keep the plant running and powered up, even though utility power was out for about a week. And when the Windsor Bridge was washed out. And whereas he is presented to aid and assist operators in the foulest of weather, the most detestable environments, and on occasion very dangerous situations to make sure that the tasks are carried out safely. And now, therefore, by virtue of the authority invested as, I'll let you read that part. Because I'm not the president of the board of directors, but on behalf of them and the entire board, district staff, and all the Cambrians, on this day of December 15th, 2005, I hereby present Wastewater Supervisor George Jardine this proclamation of public recognition, extending to him our deepest appreciation for his long distinguished service and our best wishes for continued success in all future endeavors. And signed, Greg Sanders and Kathy Chick. Signing?
Oh, I'm fine. I made it through 25 years without having to say anything. So. Yeah, thank you very much. You bet. Awesome. I'll see you in February.
Okay.
Absolutely. George, thank you very much for all your many, many years of dedicated service to the community. One of our true unsung heroes. Goes to work every day and rarely gets the thanks for what is a very difficult job. We'll now move to the consent agenda. Items B and C have been removed for separate consideration. We will take up item B first. Director Coben, you ask that this item be pulled.
Thank you. Mr. President, I'd like to ask that we take no action on these minutes for this day. And then I'd like to ask perhaps the general manager, Kathy Choate, and maybe even legal counsel, just get together and talk about a way that minutes could be presented. As I read these, I know Kathy works so hard on all this and tries to get so many thoughts down. And as I read these, there are a couple places where there's sort of gaps in the information. And so I think it's better not to have that. For instance, in one place it describes the appointment process, and there's a couple little steps that were missed.
Yes, it is.
I think technically all we need are the actions. We don't to record the actions, right, and approve them. That we don't need to approve what people said and so forth.
That's a wonderful gift during this holiday season, gentlemen.
Oh wow,
Director Chaldicott.
So
yeah, I'd like to clarify. Didn't we in fact go down this road one time?
Yes, we did about a year or so ago, yeah. I believe. That's correct.
So was it by direction or did it just by default it sort of drifted back to?
Perhaps by default, I don't think there's been any direction. Mm-hmm. But I think the consensus here is, as Joan has stated, that is to keep the minutes as simple as possible and to use the videos as backup for any interpretation that's necessary of any item that appears in the written minutes. So with that, do you have a motion, Director Coben?
I guess the motion is just not to act on these minutes today and bring them back in a new format. Or
it's been moved to postpone action on the minutes that appear on the consent agenda for today and to bring them back at a later date for action in a format that has been suggested. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it. Once I get my voice, I'll second.
You. It's been seconded by Director Villeneuve.
May I make a suggestion?
Of course.
We got the. I don't think Joan has a problem with the minutes per se. Just maybe the style. The work has already been done on this. Maybe. the way I understand the motion, I understand there's a major compression of the work of staff and the actual verbiage that's contained in the minutes.
That's right.
In the future.
That's correct. Although I believe Director Coben found a couple of minor errors that probably need to be corrected.
I thought the errors were kind of like no big deal.
Well, it says it describes that process, but it doesn't. It's not complete. So I think that's...
Okay. I think whatever they are, we have to get them right.
It's not a...
Whatever format they follow. So there's a motion and a second to postpone action and to have them rewritten and presented to the board at a later meeting in the format that has been described. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The next consent agenda item that has been pulled is item C. Director Chaldicott.
Thank you. It's just the fact that in our presentation it was incomplete, so I thought I'd give staff the opportunity to give us a complete presentation. If you would.
Is there a more complete report from the staff on this item?
Yes.
I'm going to turn it over to Fire Chief Bob Penny. It's mainly the amount of the lease purchase of the new fire engine. Bob?
That's fine. Excuse me. When I submitted this agenda item to you at the time, I did not have a purchase price from the manufacturer, which is Pierce Oshkosh Manufacturing. I received that today in the amount of $450,000. That's the purchase price of the engine. My goal, and I believe the goal of our finance manager, is that we've been setting aside $40,000 last year and this year in the budget, and that we would not only lease purchase it, but we will try to make a balloon payment up front so that it shortens the amount of time we have to lease purchase the apparatus so that we're not paying for it hopefully longer than 8 to 10 years.
Has our finance officer had a chance to review this and comment on it?
The only thing that I've really talked about with Patrick is not so much the dollar amount. Initially, we talked about the initial purchase price being somewhere between $400,000 and $450,000. Oshkosh Capital, who we currently lease purchase one of our pieces of equipment with, is going to send us a lease schedule so that we can make sure it fits within the amount of money that we set aside annually for replacement of fixed apparatus, which currently right now is $40,000 a year. Patrick, I don't know if you have some other comment you want to make or whatever.
The comment I would have on this is the operating budget that's been approved for this year, we did approve a lease purchase payment in there, and it fit in because we really stretched out the lease purchase payment. Ideally, I would really like, I don't like debt, so I really would like to short-term this as much as we can. I know last year at the end of our fiscal year, the amount of money that was budgeted for the lease purchase engine, we earmarked specifically for it because it wasn't spent, just to save it in reserves. So my comment would be, obviously, if Chief Putney needs the engine, I mean, that's up to him. But from a financial standpoint, the quickest we can pay for this thing, the sooner. I mean, I just don't like debt, particularly on something like an engine that, you know, you never know what the life cycle on some of this stuff is. Obviously, this thing has got to last quite a while, but I'd prefer to pay as much cash down as we can.
I guess the payment and save money, and if we can afford to do so, we have that option.
Well,
Director Coben.
Do we know as a fact that we can't at this moment? Do you know, Chief Putney, if you want to accelerate payments, do you know if it's possible?
I would defer to Patrick Bradley regarding that, because we have that clause will be in the lease purchase contract, which would be approved by the general manager. If you approve this item today, we can pay it off early, and there is no balloon payment at the end. The payments are scheduled basically to pay for the purchase price of the apparatus, and currently today what's 4.34%, basically, which is a percentage that they put on top for lease purchase. So my goal was to put as much money down up front so that we're not our lease purchase amount is less than the $450,000 purchase price.
So is the interest on the unpaid balance or the whole? So we'd only pay interest on, if you paid a large amount up front, then the interest is only on the what's left?
Yeah, I believe, if I understand correctly, and Patrick may have more information, the 4.34% that they put on top is to span it out for whatever period of time that we decide to lease purchase the engine. If we decide that we can afford to pay it off in 7 years, then it would be for that 7-year lease purchase, and the annual amounts that we would have to pay for that would be to pay it off in that period of time. So the only percentage we pay up front is for the fact that we're using their money to pay for the engine over the period of the lease purchase. If we pay it off early, there is an early prepayment option, and I don't know how much money that takes off our last payment.
Director Chaldeca?
Yes, I would like to give management the opportunity to go ahead, because I think they have our best interest at heart. What we do know is the longer you wait, the more the interest rates are going to go up, and January 1st could easily be the time that you decide to up the rates, and we've just lost the money.
Peter,
yeah,
this is an engine that's been needed for about a decade at least, as far as I understand. We're going to spend $500,000 mm-hmm. on an asset, and we're going to do it without any kind of financial analysis. Does that seem reasonable?
My position is I can't see spending almost $500,000 on a capital asset and not having a full analysis of the financial impact to the district before me. As Director Funky Ballou states, this engine has been budgeted for a long time. I don't think another month is going to hurt. Even if interest rates go up, we'll just have to suffer the consequences of that. But I can't, in good conscience, make a decision on this without having the full array of financial issues presented to us.
And frankly, I don't think the interest rates are going to be that significant a factor in 35 days. I really don't. I mean, what do you think, Patrick? Do you think it's going to be that much of a difference in 35 days?
In 35 days, I would say no. I mean, there might be a small uptick, but I don't think anything that's going to materially blow this purchase of this fire engine out of the water. And I personally would also like to have a little bit more time to review it, because I wasn't even sure the purchase price until just now. Obviously, we'd like to fit as much as we can in our budget. In fact, I'm working on the budget projections right now. Obviously, this is general fund money. It's competing with a number of other things. We do have a budget, and there is a component of it approved in this year's operating budget as well as last year's. To answer your question is no, I don't think their rates are going to materially go up that much.
We have a special meeting scheduled for the first week in January. Is there any reason why this item couldn't be brought back to us at that special meeting?
That was going to be my comment. That gives us probably ample time to be able to review it.
So that foreshortens the delay to just a couple of weeks. And I see the chief nodding his acquiescence anyway.
That would.
Is there a motion then for this item? We don't. By just consensus, we can postpone action on this until the special meeting in January. I don't see any opposition to that.
No. With a finance plan.
With the finance plan coming back to us and options available to us in terms of the length of the lease and amount of purchase. Okay. With that, item C is continued until the special meeting in January. The general manager will read the balance of the consent agenda items.
Thank you. Item 7A is to approve the expenditures for the month of November 2005. Item 7D is to adopt Resolution 72-2005, authorizing a consulting services agreement with Gus Yates for assistance in providing hydrological analyses and related technical support. Item 7E is to adopt Resolution 76.
District. And we'll hear from Bob Gressens, our district engineer. Bob, before you begin, I do have a request to speak from Don Melendi on the memorandum of understanding that was just approved. And Don, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to pass you over. It just got away from me there for a minute. Come on up. Welcome.
Thank you. On behalf of the Healthcare District Board of Trustees, I just would like to extend our appreciation to the Board of Directors of the Services District and staff, Tammy and Bob, for their cooperation and work toward this mutual endeavor that we're undertaking. We're looking forward to continuing forward with the project, and hopefully we can come to a very positive outcome at the end. And that's basically all I have, unless there's any questions from the board.
Any questions of Don Melendi?
I think we should recognize Don as the new head of the health district. And
absolutely.
He's on TV right now. So.
You bet.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And we're all looking forward to working closely with the healthcare district. I think by combining our resources and working together, we'll get a lot more bang for the buck for the residents of Cambria.
And I agree, and I think the Board of Trustees feel the same way.
Thank you, Don, very much.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
And for the board's information and the public, Chief Putney will be attending the healthcare district's meeting on December 20th, that's next Tuesday, or Assistant Fire Chief Mark Miller, just so that he can do essentially what Don just did for his district and to be there to respond to any questions.
Thank you. And we'll now hear from our district engineer, Bob Gressens, on the urban water management plan. Bob?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. As Carlos gets this ready for our presentation here, I realize I said it was a brief presentation. I suppose I lied. It's a little bit longer than a brief presentation. But there are handouts. We just set some handouts on the back of the table. And so if people in the audience would like handouts, there's a few back there. The urban water management planning is a fairly substantial issue with water agencies. This is a follow-up to actually a March meeting that we had where you approved one at that time, and it was subject to further review by the Department of Water Resources. Well, we did get review comments on it. I felt they're very substantial and needed to re-present the 2005 update to you today to have that approved. So I'll go through this presentation. It pretty much covers the staff report. I'd be glad to come back to the staff report if there are questions on it at that point. Next slide, please. So the goals of this presentation is to give you a background on urban water management planning, the purpose of the plan, the state policy, review the report that was part of your agenda package, respond to your questions, conduct a public hearing, and hopefully approve the resolution subject to your decision. Next slide. Urban Water Management Planning Act was made effective by the state legislature back in January of 1984. It's in the water code under the sections 10610 through 106565. I think there's an extra 65 in there. But there's updates required every 5 years that fall into 00 and 05 years. And it's required if you have more than 3,000 customers, which the CCSD has. Also, if you have more than 3,000 acre feet, well, we're below that number. It was previously a voluntary measure by water agencies. The state added more teeth to the act by linking state grant funding to having a DWR-approved plan. The last time this was presented to you, of course, was March 2005, and the current plan, we believe, responds to DWR review. I'm still waiting to hear from them on everything on that on the report. Hopefully, I won't have to come back to you again. It is due by the end of the year, in my viewpoint. Next slide. The purpose, just snipped out of the part of their act, is to make every effort to ensure the appropriate level of reliability in our water service is sufficient to meet the needs in various categories of customers during normal, dry, and multiple dry years. And more to follow on that. Next slide. And just out of the state policy, and this is the part of the preamble to the act, but it's essentially the management of urban water demands and efficient use of water shall be actively pursued to protect both the people of the state and their water resources. The management of the urban water demands and efficient use of urban water supplies shall be a guiding criterion in public decisions. And particularly Ben Bohr, I mean, he was our past water conservation coordinator, and he's done a tremendous amount of work for the district on water conservation. So Ben deserves a lot of credit. He also was very generous with his time, and even though he was doing a lot of work out in the field, to meet with us and provide some input. Corey Ryan in our front office is now the district's water conservation coordinator, and she's doing a yeoman's job trying to get up to speed real quickly. In fact, I think she's at training today, if I remember correctly, on some of the water conservation measures. Jim Adams has continued to provide detailed data. We had some outside peer review with Corello engineers, a gentleman named Tony Akel in particular. The Coastwise group, Dean Coker, assisted in getting through the demand management measures chapter, which is very helpful. And lastly, Kathy Choate and Monique Madrid have helped with the report production. So I appreciate the help of all these people. So next slide. Chapter 1 goes into background and service area characteristics and the coordination of the plan. And some of the key coordination points were with the Slo County, November 2005, Cambria and San Simeon Acres community plans of the North Coast Area Plan, which is mentioned earlier, is going through, about to go through with review with the Board of Supervisors. There's local coastal program recommendations that we considered, including the desire to reduce build-out potential in Cambria. So we talk a little about the build-out reduction program and the Water Master Plan reports, been a series of reports that we incorporated into this document. Next slide. The Water Resource chapter talks about our existing sources, and basically we're allowed a maximum of 1,230 acre-feet per year by various permits. The key, of course, as Brian pointed out earlier, is the dry season. And for the State Water Resource Control Board diversion permit on San Simeon Creek, we're allowed 370 acre-feet maximum from when the flow ceases at the Palmer Flats gauging station till October 31st. And then on Santa Rosa Creek Aquifer, we have a 260 acre-foot limit by the state from May 1 to October 31st, and it's slightly different by the Coastal Commission permit. It says 260 from July 1 to November 20th, so slightly different time frames there. And of course, we've had a temporary well that we've installed following the 1999 MTBE discovery at the Santa Rosa Creek Aquifer. Next slide. This is one interesting chart. At least it's interesting to me. I don't know about many other people, but it just shows our well production from about 1975 through about 2004. And I just circled some key milestones in there that were either drought periods and so forth. Like the 75-76 period was a major drought. The San Simeon wells were placed online around March of 1979. Again, another key drought period was from 1988 to 1990. We had the MTBE plume discovered roughly in the 1999 time frame, and then we responded by building the emergency well and treatment plant, which went online in around August of 2001. And then the bottom line, the top line shows total production by our wells. You can see, and around the 1988 time frame, we hit a peak of above 800 acre feet, and since then we've been below that, even though we trended upwards. But we did come down this last year in particular. The red line is just to, although it doesn't match the permit criteria exactly, I just took the May through October totals to represent a dry season. Just shows what we've been producing during those dry seasons. And then the bottom line is just a line showing the rainfall amount, which shows it either 100% being average and slightly, you know, if you look across that 100 number, that's 100% on that one. So you can see we were below rainfall amounts for the last couple of years. Next slide. Chapter 2, just continuing with the our overall approach, basically outlined by the Water Master Plan, is a three-pronged one. It's continued water conservation, future recycled water system, and a future seawater desalination system. Next slide. This is a little detailed for an overhead, but the part of the Act requires you to project flows in five-year increments, And starting in 2010, we show how the desalination would provide up to 602 acre-feet during the summer months, for example. And in developing this total amount, the focus really was on the dry season. We used 286 acre-feet, and we have a 20% set-aside for the visitor serving per the Coastal Commission permit. Next slide. We analyzed, and this was a major update to this December report, was the analytical part of the single dry year and multiple dry year scenarios. And for single dry year, we used the 1990 season, which was only 7.89 inches of rainfall. And for multiple year, we used the 1988 through 1990 drought period. We projected these conditions forward with the increased demands. And the bottom line is we were able to offset the drought deficiency by the future desalination facility. Next slide. Just some of the detailed findings were the single dry year requires at least a 24% reduction in demand. And then if you had no desalination in place with multiple dry year scenarios, and that was modeled for 2006 through 2008, you have to have reductions of 21, 28, and 49% below where we're at right now on our usage. With the desalination in place and with the same dry year scenario and pushing it all the way out to 2023 through 2025 when we're pretty much at the build-out numbers, there's no reduction needed by using the desalination for the longer duration. So it would actually pump outside of the dry season that we planned right now. You just would run it for more days during the year.
Bob, can I ask a quick question at this juncture? What you're saying is if we have a multiple-year drought scenario, say 2006 through 2008, by 2008 we would have to cut consumption of water in Cambria by 50% from what it is today.
That's right.
I mean, that's just a draconian scenario.
I think
that bears emphasizing. We're hanging by a slender thread with respect to our water supply.
Right. It would be very difficult at this point.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Next slide, please. Chapter 4, we talk about water use. Again, the five-year increments, we went from 2000 to 2025. Roughly just accounting that 25% of our production goes towards the commercial accounts, which are primarily the visitor serving accounts. We have an unaccountable amount of water, which is basically the difference between production and the build totals. That's about 12.6% in 2004. We're hoping that comes down, particularly with the new water meters that are being installed. We can't project this savings, though, or this reduction to production because old meters tend to read low. So it's most likely that the build total, it might be low compared to, and that would reduce that percent difference. Next slide. Again, in the projections, we assume some reduction in that loss of production number between the build and the unaccounted water. We thought it would go down to about 7% by 2025. We're recommending a goal of 5% actually in one of the demand management measures that comes up later in the report. Next slide. Chapter 5 summarizes supply and demand. Basically, the green circle you see there shows the desalination project going in. And after that, and after the moratorium is lastly raised, we used two lines to illustrate current demands with an increase until you hit the 4650 build-out number where the curves flatten out. And then the upper red curve would show with the higher 18 unit bi-monthly usage. So it's going to be in a range in there, but we're supplying water for the worst case, which would be the upper line. Next slide. The Act also asked for us to describe our current water shortage contingency plan, which was passed by an ordinance some time ago and is now in the district code, but it's summarized by three stages. And stage one, we call a drought watch, and that accomplishes roughly a 7% reduction in use, and that's a voluntary measure. And some of the conditions is residential use has to be less than 3 units per person per month. Commercial use is less than 5 units per EDU per month. If we need to go to a water rationing stage two, that's to accomplish roughly a 15% reduction, and that's a mandatory measure. And then residential use is, again, the same numbers as above, but then we start applying surcharges to accounts that might exceed those limits. And lastly, the water rationing stage three is a 50% reduction. That's mandatory. In Chapter 7, we again talk about seawater desalination, and that's sized at roughly 602 acre-feet per dry season period, which is averages 184 days per year. Again, the Water Resource Development Act, through the federal funding, it's been authorized, still hasn't been fully appropriated. We also plan to seek Prop 50 funding on that project, and we have a two-tiered environmental clearance process occurring where right now we're completing the program EIR, which includes the build-out reduction component, but then we'll follow that with a project-level EIR that'll have various alternatives, and it'll rely on the program EIR to address the growth-inducing impacts and some other impacts as well. Right now, we're waiting on permitting to get approved so we can do the geotechnical investigation to develop alternatives that will then go into the project-level EIR. And then the other project that's a long-term one is recycled water, and there's some additional geohydrology work that is needed before we can finalize that one. Next slide. Chapter 8 is what I feel the state is really focused in on, and particularly from their review comments. But there's 14 demand management measures that are called out in the state code and are used by the DWR in its detailed review. Our recent membership into the California Urban Water Conservation Council helps us tremendously in this area because it ensures that our record keeping in the future will meet the state reporting requirements. Not only that, beyond that, we're going to be doing it the way the state wants you to do it, which we pretty much do. There's a few areas I'll talk about later that we can probably improve on. It also provides quite a few resources for the CCSD. For example, Corey Ryan is at a training class right now that's put on by the CUWCC, so that's beneficial to us. Next slide. The demand management measures, I won't go into a lot of detail unless there's questions, but essentially there's 14 of them, and it's the residential water surveys, residential plumbing retrofit program, system water audits, leak detection and repair, metering with commodity rates, large landscape conservation programs and incentives, high-efficiency washing machine rebates, public information programs, the school education programs, commercial programs for our conservation programs for commercial, industrial, and institutional accounts. They list one related to wholesale, where if you had wholesale water, which we don't have, we have no imported water, so that doesn't apply. But there's also conservation pricing, the requirement for a water conservation coordinator, a water waste prohibition, as well as the ultra-low flow toilet rebate programs. So we're doing pretty much all those right now. Our data hasn't been reported in exactly the format the state wants, so we're making improvements on that. But under each specific condition in the report, we pretty much tell you what the existing program is, what we're planning on doing, and how we're going to measure its effectiveness. And next slide. There's also a brief summary, and I think this is attributed to Ben's efforts, but I looked at 2000, or about a five-year period. I think it was 95 to 2000, if I remember right. But the savings from water conservation has been roughly 215 acre-feet per year, which is pretty substantial. Future considerations on water conservation measures, again, it's the build-out reduction to reduce that build-out potential. We feel that the new supervisory control and data acquisition system is going to help some. It's going to be a much more reliable radio system to control the water operations with. And there'll be more emphasis in the future on outdoor water conservation. Right now, it's pretty much handled through the tiered rate system and the drought surcharge, so it's financially, it hits people pretty hard. But the trends that we see coming up are these newer irrigation controllers, which are based on evapotranspiration. They have little microprocessors in them where they can adjust by seasonal period to match the need for the plants. We call them ET controllers. And then also incentives possibly for further water conservation, such as trying to remove turf grass, for example, and those types of things. Next slide. At this point, I'll close, and I'd be glad to answer questions. I could add just a little bit the fiscal impact discussion out of this staff report is we spent less than $10,000 on the consultants related. So it's been mostly an in-house effort to put this one together. So,
any questions of the district engineer? Yes. Director Villeneuve.
Unity committed down to about 50% of their normal consumption. What happens in the case of a wildland fire? Do we just stand there and get our fiddles out and play?
Sometimes it feels like we're fiddling, you know. We're dancing as fast as we can. We don't seem to get anywhere. But we'll first rely on the increased tank storage. Mm-hmm. And, obviously, we're going to be in a world of hurt if we have to start pulling our aquifers down low because of an extended fire and you're running all your hydrants. You're basically going to be lowering that water table much quicker than what Brian's earlier graph showed. Mm-hmm. So it could lead to a considerable emergency because as you get lower in the aquifer, it's kind of U-shaped. So the bottom of that thing has less and less storage as it gets lower and lower. So it starts dropping much faster because the storage volume per foot starts getting less and less as you go down. So it would depend on when that fire hit, for example. If it hit late October and there were no rains to recharge the aquifer, that's probably the very worst time for that to happen to us. It's because we're already going to be low in the aquifer at that point in time. I suspect that we would have to rely much more on the Santa Rosa aquifer and the emergency well SR4 in such a situation. Overlapping that are habitat concerns. And I guess if you're in a wildfire, the habitat concerns may start to go out the window if you have ash and sediment flowing down the creeks and that. But I mean that's another area that we are trying to avoid impacting in this strategy is the habitat.
Well, looking at this, from the glass being half full type of perspective, if we are running into some questions and being jerked around like we have been with the previous expansion of the Pinoles tanks vis-a-vis our proposal for expanding the Stewart Street capacity, we get into that, I would think that this would be an extremely powerful argument to just get the, we need to get that done as fast as possible because all you have to do is look back at 76. This is as predictable as you can get. That we're going to be in it at some time and point. All you do is look at the last 50 years of water rainfall patterns and leaving us dangling in the wind like that. I think it would make a very cogent and reasonable argument to leverage as fast as possible the completion of that project. They're putting the whole community at risk if they just, whoever it is, whether it's Coastal Commission or any other agency that we have to go through for permitting, I think we really can use this productively.
I agree, and it's one reason why we went as far as to start quoting some of the local coastal program recommendations within this report. For example, the build-out reduction was a key one that we said, you know, we're trying to accomplish this build-out reduction because we're hopeful that in the long-term scheme, when we address these conditions, that they won't come back to haunt us at the permitting stage later on. So we're trying to set the stage so this will move forward and won't get caught in some kind of a gridlock because there's a missed program condition as well as the county permitting process.
And following up on Director Villeneuve's comments, and just for the edification of those here today and those who may be watching the video later on television, there is a perfect storm scenario that would be devastating for this town. When our water supply is at its lowest, the fire season is at its highest. And when the fire season is at its highest in Cambria, it's at its highest elsewhere in the state, particularly in Southern California, with the propensity for Santa Ana winds. So anybody who thinks that we can rely on CDF's exotic equipment like airplanes and helicopters and so forth may be engaging in some wishful thinking if there are multiple fires throughout the state, which has happened regularly over the past couple of decades. That equipment could be down in Southern California fighting fires in Malibu, Topanga Canyon, Laguna Beach, et cetera, while Cambria is struggling to get the last drop of water out of its aquifers.
Assuming this is an important milestone to have this done, things can go from here once we funding and getting our various permits and things. That once we get this approved, we're
You know, when I started into this thing, I thought, oh, you know, here's another regulation to have to deal with. But it actually does make good sense when you start go through the logic of it, and it forces you to plan ahead and to look at some of the multiple drought scenarios and encourages the water conservation. It tied in fairly well with what we actually have in our water master plan, you know, the three-prong approach, the recycled water, the water conservation, and the augmented supply with desalination. So I feel like we're heading in the direction the state wants. Now, hopefully they'll agree with the report at this point. We'll get it approved, and we can get our Prop 50 application in because that looks favorable towards funding a portion of the desal as well.
It also provides a very useful tool for the permitting process for water storage facilities, I think. It tends to drive home the point that we have a very risky situation here in Cambria with respect to our water storage deficit. So it serves more than one function. It's not just for Prop 50 funding. It's also for other uses as well.
Absolutely. And you know, the other interesting thing, too, I noticed in the latest county RMS report, they've split out the water system into distribution as well as supply. So we're at level 3 on both. And the reason we're at level 3 on the distribution system is because of the storage tanks.
Right. Yeah. It's a very, very significant storage deficit. Director Chaldicott?
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to move on to almost the last slide where it talks about metering with commodity rates, and as we're looking at a rate structure, what do you see that
being? It's kind of a to me it's an archaic condition that the state has because we're so far ahead of it. There are other areas in the state where they don't have water meters and yet they just have a flat rate and hook up and just have a flat rate. Well, obviously that's not going to work in where you have a water shortage going on. So the state came up with this requirement, well, we want everybody to have a water meter. Well, you know, big deal as far as Cambria goes, we all have water meters. You know, we don't want any lost water. And then the commodity rates are related to the tiered rate structure. So I feel we have a fairly well-tiered rate structure. And when you kick in the drought surcharge, it really makes that curve go up asymptotically, I guess, or exponentially, I should say, when you add the tiered rate structure to that.
So there's nothing new in that particular.
There's not really anything new there. We are doing some fascinating things with water meters, and that's with Jim Adams and Brian's group, and that's with the newer water meters, which have an ability now to to sense leaks and also have a maximum set point on them so they can trigger a flag that says, okay, if you didn't have a zero flow at night, that indicates there might be a leak in the plumbing in that house. So there's a way to flag that, and when they do their remote reads, they can then develop some special reports. And also, if I understand correctly, if it goes above a certain set point, a certain maximum set point, it can flag that and say, okay, this account is suspicious because its use is much higher than we thought it should be. You better check this one out. So that I think sets Cambria apart from a lot of water agencies right now is the new meters that are going in right now.
Another thing that Don was talking about the stage three, you know, 50% reduction under commercial, there'll be a very severe restriction on commercial, which might have a real crimp on the local motel business at that time. I mean, it could be bad for everybody.
Right, and so the economic impacts would go beyond just our agency. It would be the entire economy of Cambria.
That's what I'm thinking, right.
Yeah. Sure. Any other questions, Director Bowen?
Not a question, but I would just maybe a suggestion. we've got Lois Capp's office in Washington, D.C., trying to get the Corps of Engineers in D.C. somehow unblocked so that they can, agree or at least authorize that. This would be very, very good leverage, I would think, because if they really appreciated the position, it's not that we're looking at, to the engineer that's back there, he has no concept of what this community looks like, what the conditions are that we're trying to address, and probably has millions of hundreds of different projects passing through all the time. Many of them sort of pork barrel type.
Steve Cole. I started near the beginning of the year as I became more aware of our shortage and what it means, and right up to present day, I was just mentioning to someone that if there was, during any part of our dry season, a significant forest fire near town at all, that I never thought I'd be saying this, but I decided that it would probably be best if I pack at that point, before it reaches town, I'd pack my important things in the car and move off to a distance where I was clear. And it would seem strange thinking about that at any future year, but it seems that serious. And does that seem too far out to you, considering what I've been hearing this year?
I don't think it sounds too far out, but I think Chief Putney might want to comment on that. I know that in the Oakland Hills fire, one of the significant problems was that the roads were choked with automobile traffic, and there were instances where cars reached an intersection at the same time. Everybody's trying to get out at once. Mm-hmm. And on at least one occasion, several cars were fused together because the heat was so intense. Mm-hmm. And so you can only imagine what can happen in Lodge Hill in particular, where the street system is not a grid system like it is on Park Hill, yeah, or up on Happy Hill, where it's not a
grid system. And thinking about all those possibilities, it seemed reasonable at the outset to do that, and I wouldn't have thought this in any place I've ever lived in my life. Also I'd be getting out of the way, and I'd put a note on my residence or on the street perhaps saying that I've evacuated at the same time, so that there would not be
people
any further burden
for you.
Yeah, on anyone. But
Chief, any comments on that?
This is a very difficult subject just to put one answer to, because Cambria has a lot of different neighborhoods. Being prepared to evacuate at any time is definitely a value that everyone in this community should have. We advocate people are prepared to do that at any point in time. There are measures you can take around your home where you could feel comfortable that if you were surprised by a fire, and did not have enough time to get out that you could actually survive a fire staying in your home if you'd taken some steps ahead of time to mitigate that situation. There's a good chance if the tanks are full. In firefighting, we use the volume of the tanks to try to put the fire out. As soon as we have exhausted the volume of the tanks, the pumps that bring the water from the aquifer to the storage tanks that we use to protect the community are not going to keep up with our fire flow, and that's where we're fighting a losing battle. I don't think it's realistic to think you see smoke plume in the distance. It's October 3rd. It's a hot, dry day, and you go, Cambria is going to burn to the ground. We will have a large wholesale wildfire someday that either starts in Cambria or comes in from the outside, and it could be a stand replacement fire. But I would be prepared to evacuate at any time. I don't know that I would just, if it was a hot, dry day, just flat move out of town. I can tell you I'm not. We're going to be here, and we're going to do the best we can to protect
people. I hope you're not going to.
No. I just want to make sure everybody knows we're not running. If we're going, if we're leaving town, there's a good reason for it. You better follow
us. You'll have a long parade of people right behind you.
Yeah, exactly.
Chief, you mentioned once earlier in the year, I don't know if you can answer that without that documentation, but as to what you can handle regarding some type of forest fire and then how many structure fires in town at once in the dry season.
Well, actually, that was part of the philosophy to scale the size of the tanks. We were talking about a wildland fire, for example, a half-acre wildland fire, excuse me, out on the West Ranch that's grasslands. It's pretty easy to put out. But when you take a half-acre of Cambria Monterey pine forest that's on fire with houses sprinkled all around it, it becomes very complex. So it really depends on the intensity of the fire. We also identified one large commercial fire. Or, you know, having two or three simultaneous residential fires in and around Cambria. That's what Bob Gressens and all the staff and I worked on to try to model the water system so that we plan for that catastrophic fire, but still knew that there could be a catastrophe larger than is reasonable to plan for because we have to use tax money to fund this. And we can't build the best possible water system in the world because funding is... You know, is sure. Something that's going to hold us back.
Plus, so, we were restricted
Steve, I think what we'll probably do sometime next year, we'll probably have another fire safety town hall meeting.
Right.
And I think we'll probably get all of these issues out on the table once again and remind everybody about what fire safety is all about.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have a request to speak now from Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
Speaking of the residential use in Cambria, you discover who uses what in terms of water quantity. Because I think you have people who really conserve water in Cambria, who are 12 units and under, who are the vast majority of the population, and we're now talking about raising the limit to 18 to serve the minority who use too much. I know it's a quality of life issue. I've heard this mentioned before. I know that some of you consider the 12 units bimonthly a, quote, starvation diet, end quote, or a, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, a draconian level here, which actually the emergency level comes almost to 12 units, to half of the 12 units. But I want to ask a question, not to do a rhetorical lambast on my usual issue of conservation and water. But I would like to ask the board to discuss the relationship, before you approve this report, of the raising of the quality of life standard from 12 units to 18 bimonthly, on the average, apparently, which is on page 3-2 and elsewhere, to discuss that in relationship to your commitment to demand management. I think that raising it 50% usage rate on quality of life criteria needs some explanation for those of us who are very much committed to the respect of water in the amount available to us on planet Earth and how we use it. So please, before you vote, discuss increasing the units from 12 to 18 bimonthly in relationship to Chapter 8. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. As most persons who have followed the development of the Water Master Plan, the Urban Water Management Plan, and the other water issues that we're faced with, we've discussed almost ad nauseum the reason for raising the average amount of consumption from 12 to 18 units bimonthly. Is there anybody else in the audience who would care to speak on this item? Apparently not. The public hearing is closed. What is the pleasure of the board?
Do you want to vote to accept the urban water management plan?
Yes, if there's a motion to do that.
I'll do that. I'll make the motion that we adopt the Cambria Community Services District Urban Water Management Plan.
And the associated resolution 70-2005.
Right. It's been moved to adopt resolution 70-2005 approving the Urban Water Management Plan. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
I wonder, Mr. President,
yes,
we were talking
Director
about fire safety just a few moments ago with Mr. Cole. The one thing that the chief recommended the last time this was up, that everyone establishes a route out of their home into safety, which is different to the main road. I've spoke to several people who do not know how to get from Lodge Hill to somewhere else other than along Ardath, and they never think about it. Well, you don't want to think it when the smoke is thick.
Yeah. That's very true, and I would suggest that we do have another fire safety town hall meeting. The last one was very successful, I think, and as a part of that, I'd like to see some emphasis on evacuation routes and alternative means of getting out of places, particularly like Lodge Hill, where it can be difficult.
I would agree, particularly that right now the Tribune is running the series of evacuation plans and emergency plans, so it's a good time to just join in and show that we're part of that process.
It's now 2:30. Would it be acceptable to the board members to take a 10-minute break?
Yeah.
Yes. So we will reconvene at 20 minutes to 3:00.